Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the S. Tall Paul Blog Talk Radio Show. And I'm Tall Paul, your host. Every week we have a show about going green and creating permaculture, sustainable systems using permaculture. And last week we had Joey D'Elia online, and he's a local expert in the San Diego area, and he's a certified permaculture design specialist. And he is supposed to be joining me. I know he's in the chat room. He's not on the call yet, but he's going to try somehow. Joey, if you can call in, the number is 347-838-9986. Anyway, so last week we had an overwhelming response. We had the largest number of listeners of any of my episodes. And that was our first episode regarding permaculture. And basically, what is permaculture? It's an enormous umbrella that encompasses basically creating a way of life. And there's three principles, three ethics that are involved. The first is care of the earth. The second is care of people. And the third is return of surplus. So as you keep these things in mind and you live your life, how is it that you can take care of the earth? And there's so many things you can do. And we're not here to tell you, you must do this, you must do that. It's more, we're encouraging everyone to look at their own life, to look at your interests, and to step back and say, well, in what ways can I improve the way that I'm living to help care for the earth and the people that I have and share my life with? And where do I have surplus? So a great example is, you know, this week I've been trying to move. I'm actually moving to Tipuana Farm, which is Joey's permaculture demonstration site. And I have a lot of surplus in my existing house. So I've been going through and trying to find out what's exactly do I need to live and what is excess. So I've been giving away all kinds of stuff. And some of it, you know, I saw as a problem, like, how am I going to get rid of this furniture? I didn't know how to return the surplus. But when they say when there's a will, there's a way. So it was quite easy. You know, I just said, you know anyone that needs furniture? And all of a sudden, a family came forward and all my furniture that I was trying to get rid of and to return to whoever needed it, they came and took it all. So it was great. So Joey's asking me what the number is again. It's 347-838-9986. And so each week, as you listen to our shows, if you have questions about permaculture or any questions about what you can do in your existing situation, we'd love to take your calls. We prefer a live call if you can call in at 347-838-9986, or you can always type a question in the chat room, and we'll try to answer those questions as well. So we kind of like to have a free-form platform, but each week we'll have a different topic. So this week we were going to talk about okay, here's Joey. Let's bring him in.
Joey, are you there? Permaculture? Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Good to hear your voice, Joey.
Oh.
So, Joey, did you hear me talking about you?
My ears were burning.
Uh-oh.
No.
Well, if you guys didn't hear our first episode, Joey and I like to have a lot of fun, and I call it permaculture fun. And the truth is, as Joey said very well last week, the topics we're talking about are serious, you know, like care of the earth. But you can have fun doing it. And really, the people that you meet along the way in the journey, it's incredible. I mean, I've had so much fun, You know, I've been personally gardening for many, many years, but I started with the actual growing food about 5 years ago. But this permaculture aspect, I wasn't really introduced to until about a year and a half ago or so. And that's when really the permaculture fun, or the fun in the whole aspect of gardening and growing food and all that, that is when it all came into place, because I met such interesting people, and we go forward, you know, when we have these different events, and, you know, Joey's very much part of that. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to our first episode, please go back to Ask Tall Paul on Blog Talk Radio and listen to the previous episode. Again, it was our largest. We had so many listeners. It was so encouraging to see, because people really do want to make a difference, and hopefully we're going to be able to teach you simple and easy ways to get you started. And then as you learn something, you can then build upon it and teach others, share your knowledge and your surplus. So
that's
welcome,
right.
Joey.
Like Paul was, yeah, thank you. And, like you were saying, if we can have some fun, then it's a lot more exciting to keep going, because as you keep going, it can get more difficult, because some of the new things that we try to do, we kind of, you know, push the limits a little bit of maybe our comfort zone, or just the amount of knowledge that we have about a given subject, whether it be gardening or building or designing. But in the beginning, you just start simple, so we can be encouraged through having, you know, some positive. One of my teachers likes to say, you know, happy little accidents and sad little failures. So we can just keep going and doing some simple techniques or some practices to encourage us to on this meaning kind of permaculture path to live ideally a happier life. We may already be happy, but we can always increase that happiness and ideally increase happiness of others through our action. So being more sustainable would definitely fit into all those categories of happiness and fun and doing something responsible for ourselves and for other people and future generations. So we like to talk about that stuff.
Absolutely. And it sounds like Joey's building a deck or something over there. You know, Joey does the work of 10 people. So yeah. When you get to meet him, and you will someday, hopefully, you come to San Diego or you'll meet him at a conference someday, you never know, you'll be pleasantly surprised at not only, you know, just what a great person he is, but also how motivating he is. And he has a certain knack to help people to go and try new things. And he certainly has helped me to do that. So, anyway, in the beginning, we really want to keep this simple so that anybody, no matter what your knowledge about going green or creating sustainable systems, anybody can do something. And it's easy to just get started and to do it. So congratulations for listening, because that's really one of the first steps. Now, for those of you that are experts, great. We're glad you're here, too. Call on in. You could offer your advice. We'd love to have a dialogue with, you know, everybody. So if anyone's listening, you can call in at 347-838-9986. So, Joey, tell us simply, what is permaculture?
Well, permaculture is, I like to say, is a design science. It's a combination of two words, permanent and culture. So you have a permanent kind of agriculture and a permanent culture linked together. And the way we simply thinking about how to attain a permanent culture where you're fed and you're housed and you're and you're comforted, is design. You got to design that kind of thing. So permaculture is that design science, and looking at all the different parts of how we live, not just our food, but how we house ourselves, how we drive ourselves, how we communicate and interact monetarily, you know, our finances, how we move resources around.
We're laughing because, you know, we can see you or hear you speaking with your hands.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It was happening. You were right.
You were, like, on fire.
So we...
Go on.
We have... Well, but it's an exciting day today. I was working out in our little forest, working with the fruit trees and the chickens and digging holes and stuff. So, and we've been working on our classroom area here, and my in-laws came into town, and they're all excited to see what.
Oh, they're
been
in town.
Doing. Yeah, they just got here this morning.
Okay. So here I am. I'm in the city. How do I use these design principles? Where do I start?
Well, design a vehicle to get out. No, just kidding. You just stay in the city and you start thinking about sometimes I think the easy ones are to start with, or it's something we all are very familiar with, is water. And where is our water coming from, I think, is a first step into just thinking about how we're going to live, because that's basically the first thing you need to survive and to live a healthy life is a good supply of water, fresh water or good drinking water. And that's the only thing you can go without, you know, weeks without food, but not water. So when we're looking in our city life and we just think about, well, how does the water even get to our house or to our apartment or condo, whatever, however we're living. And you think about, well, for instance, I'll just give you an example of where our water comes from in San Diego, in Southern California. It comes from the Colorado River. And they put it through all sorts of big channels, and then it finally gets here, and that's crazily what's coming out of our tap. So that's all fine. Now, we know that amazing resource water is, and we're moving it all the way from the Colorado River for our usage. So how could we conserve that element of water? Are there any simple things that we can do to take that element and maybe reuse it? And I don't know how many are familiar with it, but they have a lot of different methods, you could say, of trying to. Some people put a 5-gallon bucket, and I've heard of people, you know, they fill up the bathtub. After they take a bath, they take the water out of the bathtub with a 5-gallon bucket, believe it or not, and just water the garden with it. The easiest method I've seen is that a lot of people can do is taking your laundry water, and it's called laundry to landscape, and super common now. And we have a large person that's a great proponent of that here in downtown San Diego, is Josh Robinson, and you're just taking it, the water that comes out of your laundry, out of your washing machine, and putting it into the garden somewhere. So yeah, anybody can look that up, and there's a lot of different methods and ways to do it, but the laundry machine takes a lot of water, and it's a neat thing to think that the water comes from the Colorado River, washes your clothes, and then instead of going down the sewer to get treated and then put out in the ocean, that at least it waters your plants, soaks into the ground, and then kind of hangs out now, because it's turned into leaves. And branches and stuff like that.
And depending upon the age of your washer, I mean, you could be talking about, like, how many gallons do you think are used per cycle on the old-style washing machines?
Well, even, yeah, the top-loading, even the newer top-loaders still use at least 20 gallons about a cycle. So, and there's usually a wash and then a rinse. So that's what you're looking at, 15 to 20. And then I'm not positive what the front loaders do, but it's still, if you're washing enough clothes, you got a family, it's a big load of water.
It's a significant amount of water. Like if you had to carry, if anyone's lifted a 5-gallon bottle, like a Sparkletts bottle, that's a lot, very heavy amount of water. It's a lot of water, and that's a great, great way to do it, is to, you know, start reusing that laundry water. Something that when I first started, is that 5-gallon bucket, I would just keep, like, in the kitchen. And if you ever, like, rinse a glass, you know, I would, instead of pouring it down the sink, I'd, you know, rinse it, but put the water in the bucket. And, you know, we used to make fun of my grandmother all the time because we said she lived on Little House on the Prairie. But we lived in the city, but we didn't get, like, she would wash her dishes in the sink in a tub. She wouldn't use the actual sink. She'd use this, you know, like, plastic tub. And then she'd take the water and go out and put it out on the roses. And, you know, back then we didn't know what she was doing, but, you know, when you have soapy water, that soap actually helps deter bugs, like aphids, on the roses. And it's also a way to conserve water and to recycle that water. So, Virginia, I'm sorry for making fun of you all those years. Forgive me. You were a permaculturist way before I even knew anything about permaculture. So, thumbs up.
That's right. That's good stuff right there.
Right?
Oh, yeah. That's a good, the laundry water, you can't, if you're worried about overwatering things with laundry water, just plant bananas, if you can, depending what climate you're in. Can't overwater bananas. Just a little tidbit. You can't overwater bamboo either.
I guess. Bamboo, I don't think you can. The other thing is, when I was years ago, probably, I don't know, 25 years ago, I lived in San Francisco, and they had a severe drought, and they actually had water rationing. And the government told people, if it's yellow, let it mellow, and if it's brown, flush it down. Now, sorry to be a little crude there, but basically they're saying, if you know, this one idea, rather than flush, you know, some toilets have up to, what is it, like 10 gallons of water or something? It's quite a bit of water per flush on the older style toilets. That's another way to conserve water. It's just, if it's yellow, let it mellow.
Well, that's definitely a method.
All right. Now, there's more advanced methods of toilet stuff that eventually we'll talk about, not today probably, right, Joey?
Well, not unless I feel like I'm feeling like going to the bathroom.
All right.
Getting inspired to talk about it, but I think we talked, just thinking about, but it's a good point, because now we're thinking about all the things that use water. So in this discipline, and then thinking about permaculture and as a design science, and starting to think about the elements and the things we use in our lives to live, basically, water is a giant, you know, thing, and then all the things that use water, and how could we design something more efficiently, or just starting that process. That's what I like so much about permaculture and in itself, because we're just starting these processes. We don't have to have a solution right away. We don't have to do everything now. It's impossible. It's just thinking about it, making some plans, getting kind of a priority list together, or even the list beginning with what are the priorities, or what are the priorities for an individual person. We don't all have the same priorities. And if we're looking at simple starts and ways to start, we start thinking about our priorities, what we feel comfortable doing, and what's important to us. We're just going to go with the idea that sustainability and moving towards a more positive way to live on the earth is that's our priority. Let's just say that's our call to action, is that we want to do that. So now we've got that priority. Now, what does that entail? Water, how do we use it? Where does it come from? What's the best practices that we can come up with what we have, with the way our houses are designed as they are, and what other things can we do to, you know, work on that? Even irrigation, because a lot of us that live in suburban areas, we have these houses with these irrigation systems that come on by themselves and water. Well, there's a lot of efficient types of irrigation that apply the water to the soil and to the plants that are can conserve a lot more water than the conventional systems that are out there. And that may be a priority if you have a large yard that uses a lot of water, like a lawn or something.
Or even as simple as changing your watering habits. Instead of watering in the heat of the day, water at night. And that, you know, the roots, the plants get their water that they need and they store it throughout the day. I mean, it's designed in nature. So, because in nature, the plants know it gets hot in the middle of the day. So they have built-in systems to protect themselves from drought. And, like, another thing... So, like, if you wash your car, like for me, I always tell people, well, I'm a water conservationist. It's because I haven't washed my car in probably 2 years. Now, my windshield I need to keep clean. But the actual car, you know, it's not that important to me to have a shiny car. But if it's important to you, that's fine. We're not telling you have to change, you know, not wash your car. But if you do it yourself, you know, you could park your car on the grass and wash your car on the grass so that water is going into the soil instead of onto your driveway and out to the street.
Well, there's just that other, you know, if you do want to wash your car at the actual, usually at those washing facilities,
right,
that they actually have to recycle the water a certain amount of time before they can put it into the sewer system. So if you want to wash and you can't park it on your lawn, or you're in a, you know, somewhere where that's hard to do, when you go to those facilities, a lot of them, at least in our area here in Southern California, have to recycle that water and filter it a few times. So that's definitely much better than the one-time use in the driveway, like Paul was saying, that just goes right down into the rain gutter and just down the street. But there's a lot of solutions and a lot of fun and easy ways to start making a positive change and impact on the amount of water use. And
like an example at Joey's place and even at mine, I have water collection containers, so these very large cistern type things, tanks I guess you'd say, and you know, I bought them from a manufacturer of them, but Joey's found ways to actually harvest water off the roof using different types of systems. So one of them, what do you call them, they're some sort of tote, can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's a thing we have, it's an inexpensive way of harvesting a lot of rainwater in a tank, and it's called an IBC tote. So that's International Bulk Container, and they have them all over the world. It's international, and they ship all sorts of different things in them, whether it be food grade products, glues, oils, paint, all sorts of things come in these containers. And
usually on Craigslist, which is what we have around here in the United States, and you can get, you can go on Craigslist and actually find those containers, those international bulk containers, and they hold 275 gallons. So you can set those up and get a start going, and with a very small investment of money. So those are just a fun way to start. Even the 55-gallon barrel is a great place to start to harvest water. You're going to fill it up super fast, but the 55-gallon barrel, even the 275-gallon barrel fills up fast. So that's a great place to start. And the starts are the important part. Even if you don't harvest all the water, I still don't harvest all the water, because there's some numbers there that is just really, even in our down in Southern California, in our low rainfall areas, you get an amazing amount of rain off of what they call hardscape, or hard, like your roof is considered impervious. The water doesn't move through the roof. It just hits the roof off into the rain gutter, pure runoff. The cement's like that. So they can, you can make concrete calculations, or very, very close to accurate calculations on how many gallons are coming off of those surfaces. We may have talked about this last time, but it's an interesting number, and it's part of this simple ways to start thinking about water, and they're important. Just like Paul said, with, have you ever carried 5 gallons of water? It's very heavy. And have you ever thought about when you put the shower head on and it says 2 gallons per minute? That's what the shower head's rated at. And if you take a 10-minute shower, that's 20 gallons of water. Have you ever seen what 20 gallons of water looks like? If you had, you know, five gallon buckets set up, that's 20 gallons of water. So starting to think about it that way, because most of the world actually carries water. They don't have it piped in like we do. So they have a different way they use water. They use it a lot differently.
I love that you're saying that, because in the United States, we have no clue what it means, how precious this water is. If we literally had to carry water on our heads like they do in Africa and other third world countries to tote the water a mile from the source just to make it home so the family can survive, we would think twice before we took a 5-minute shower, a 10-minute shower, or whatever. I mean, we've all seen pictures of it. It's a reality. And we're so fortunate to have water available, but people in Southern California, if you don't think about it, you need to start thinking about it, because all of our water is imported. Our water is not from here. We get it from the Colorado River and other northern sources. And this show is not just about Southern California, but the point is that we take for granted this precious resource. And whatever you're doing in your life, if there's just something you could do, a little bit, every little bit helps. We can't change the world overnight, but we can start. And
right.
If we
and
all...
Yeah, true. And even if you're in a water-rich area, like I just got back from Australia about a month ago, where if you think about it in feet, they get 6 feet of rain. We get 12 inches on average. The place I was at in Australia gets 6 feet of rain. So the idea is still to understand water and still capture it, still understand the quantities. And well, I think it's something I just thought about, and I think it's what we're kind of talking about. And it's a part of making a good design or changing our lives in a more sustainable way is almost somewhere in there. We learn a respect. We start to respect water in a way that, well, as we kind of should, since our bodies don't live without it. But, and what it takes to get it here, or and the uses that it has. And I think this shift of what we may or may not take for granted, and that will make us thinking about that and kind of come bring that to the conscious mind, will inevitably make us better designers. Because we start to think about, we start to think about that as we're moving forward, and how these elements that we respect, like the sun is a lot of energy, and it does amazing things, and the water does amazing things, and how those work in our lives, and how to incorporate them more in a respectful way, like our friends. We want to be nice and include our friends, ideally, in activities and things we do. And how do you do that in a very positive way? Well, you respect your friends and respect their opinions and try to include them in our lives. And the same for these elements that are just, you know, natural and they happen all the time. But and when you get into a position where you don't have those things, things always shift. That's why we have those amazing stories of people that have go into these other areas where maybe they're put in life and death situations, and they come back with these great epiphanies because they had to find things to actually live, or they were going to die. Well, we're looking at it not in such an extreme fashion, but with the same kind of intention. To survive, but also to do it in a happy and healthy way. And that's, I think, where respect comes in, and even respect for water and how we get it, how we use it, and what simple things can we start out doing to conserve it and understand it and understand how much rain comes off our roof, even if we don't capture it, but how much does come down. What does that look like? And how do plants work? Just even if we're not going to grow plants, because for whatever reason, we start to understand how some of these things in nature work that we're totally dependent on, whether or not we actually touch them or not, in the sense of like we go to work, you know, 40, 60 hours a week, whatever, and we don't have to like engage with nature per se, if we don't want to, but we still have to have nature in order to keep our bodies running. Well, let's say we want to understand more. Well, then we're looking to being, you know, going green and looking for a more sustainable lifestyle. Well, we start to learn respect for these things that keep us alive. And start to find ways to interact with them, whether it's water, plants, where the sun shines through your windows. I don't know if anybody's sat, maybe they've been on vacation or they've been at their own home. And there's this one place in the house in the winter that everybody likes to be in because the sun actually shines through the windows. When the sun's low in the horizon, if people have started to notice that or have always noticed it, is that sun here in our northern hemisphere, the sun moves down south. It moves south in the horizon. And then it shines through certain windows. Ideally, if we were looking at designing something, we would get that sun in the winter to shine through the windows. And there may be already a place in your house or your apartment or somewhere you live where that sun shines through in the winter. It's cold outside. But right in front of the end of that window, on your couch or your table, it's so warm and nice. That understanding of the sun and its energies at that time of the year, just understanding that, even if you're not going to change your house or change anything, you understand that now. And in that understanding, you come to start to gain a respect for the energy. And then, maybe one day, maybe if somebody else is doing something, you say, hey, the sun is over there in the winter. It'd be nice if you put something here because I always enjoy sitting in front of the window here in the winter because it's always so warm. All those things are so important and are fascinating. They're fun when you start to see them and realize them and how they're part of your life. It's a very engaging kind of lifestyle. And I think when you start to work on that sustainability and work on that greening your lifestyle, you apply permaculture design and start to study permaculture, it gives you a beautiful framework to start to learn about nature and about building, about shade, about heat, about wind. And you don't have to go, it doesn't have to be this insane scientific, like, inroad and an approach to it. It can be very simplistic and very, very easygoing into it. You can get very complicated and very sophisticated and scientific if you'd like. But there's so many very simple things that can be learned through this permaculture design science. That is the reason why I think I like to talk about it and share it with people. And I'm happy that Paul's had this show to talk about it and talk about permaculture and how it's a very nice, organized way. And there's just so many really kind people doing it and teaching. And each person has a little bit different way of teaching this design science or something that they're more into than somebody else. And so there's just this plethora now of neat teachers to connect with people in the way that other that people may like to learn or what they're more interested into. So I'm getting excited. So
Well, and it's true. I mean, Joey is really keeping it simple right now. But I'll tell you, the first night I met him, he was telling me, my swale, it collects this many. I mean, he literally had it measured down to the gallon. Right? Remember, Joey? The first night. But I was, like, for me, anyone who knows me, I am completely non-mathematical. I just, math is not my thing. But I was so impressed. It's like, wow, here is someone with a passion and who, you know, you can make it simple and you can get right down to the decimal if you need to. So, you know, for whoever's listening, there's something out there for everyone. And you take what you like and you leave the rest, you know. And today you might not be interested in harvesting the sun, you know, the solar energy, but 5 years from now, maybe you will. Like Joey and I just had there was a demonstration at his permaculture site, and it was about something called gasification. And, you know, at first I'm like, I don't know, I'm just going to go because I want to learn. And I didn't think, it seemed a little technical, but basically there's a device that these people have made. I guess it's been used for, what is it, like 100 years, Joey? But basically it's taking wood and taking the smoke and the fumes from the fire and then somehow changing that gas and converting it to a gas that's usable to even perhaps move a car or to move machinery. But I'll tell you what, I'm glad I went to that. It was so neat to see how this little tiny device could actually help people in a situation if needed, where there's no more fossil fuel and there's, you know, you have limited resources. It's just so fascinating what's out there. Now, am I going to be a gasification expert? I don't think so. Am I ever going to make one? Well, Joey wants to have a class where people can come and actually learn how to make it. And, you know, if you're interested in that, come on, we'll try it. But I hadn't even heard about it. So,
well, yeah,
I mean, that's the fun part in what's happening too is here at Tipuana Farm is our demonstration site is we've got these two guys that came over, Troy and Jared, to talk about gasification and their little business that they're starting up and to diversify energy sources. So gasification, solar, methane digesters, wind, trying to give a lot of different options so you're not dependent on one energy source, whether it just be solar or the grid or, you know, your utility company. You've got some choices and some options. And if they come, I'm trying to get them. They said they'd come back and do another demonstration because what they are really looking at running with these smaller gasification units are generators. So small internal combustion engine to power generators to make electricity. So that topic itself is fun. That's a great thing that some people just say, well, that's simple to them. I have to work on it in my brain for a while to understand some of the elements of just electricity, but it's definitely one of those elements that it needs consideration because like water, we can consume a lot of electricity, especially with the amount of gadgets that we have now that are where we're just charging these lithium ion batteries all the time and running larger and larger plasma screen TVs and laptops. So we have a lot of consideration there and start to, you know, ideally go back to that idea of respect for even the, you know, now we're talking about energy. And that's a little more identifiable now because we see these nuclear power plants. Well, that's where electricity comes. Or we don't really see a lot of the coal fire power plants, but there's electricity. Well, we've seen the dams that provide like hydroelectricity. So we can see these giant installations that we use to power the electrical grid. And if we can start to diversify the way we get our energy, our electricity, it's the same, it kind of simplifies and it goes back to a pattern in the end where, okay, look at, we've got this giant river called the Colorado and it comes in and it supplies all these houses around here with water. Well, how do we diversify that a little bit? So, you know, our whole dependence isn't on these gigantic, you know, sources. How do we kind of diversify it and start to learn about the way that we can use them more efficiently or create alternative systems or start to think about how we may move. We may say, hey, this place I'm living is not conducive to making the steps. So I need to even think about moving. But the point is that when you are looking to move and you start to think about these different ideas and these different designs and the different ways energy works and water works, you start to, the new place you're going to move, you'll be thinking about it a lot differently than just like, oh, I like that it has two bedrooms and two bathrooms and the bathroom's right next to this one bedroom or something. Now you'll be thinking about a lot of different elements, how the elements play in. Maybe is there more of a yard or less of a yard? Because maybe you like to go to community garden or you haven't But that's another topic I think we should move into, is about food and about growing and about how we can start on that path in a simple way. So what do you think about that, Paul?
Well, also, so like we were thinking, you know, how do we use water? The next thing is, how do we use energy? So, yes, I mean, we can talk about hydro dams and all these different things. And, you know, typically governments or big corporations plan all that stuff out. But we might not be directly involved with that. But we are directly involved with our own personal usage of that energy. So, like in my house, I only use electricity in the room that I am sitting in. There's no reason for me to have a light on in another part of the house that I'm not in. Now, I happen to live alone, but, you know, when I go to my brother's house, I think there's five people that live there. There's five. So, obviously, they're going to use a lot more energy than I am, but even my brother says to everybody, hey, you know, why are the lights on? Just being aware of your personal usage and then looking to see how you can cut back. Like in my own life here, I had, when I first moved in, I converted this house. I put in all new energy efficient windows and blinds that are energy efficient, all my appliances. It was basically a much older home that needed to be upgraded. I put in energy efficient insulation in the roof, blah, blah, blah. The one thing I didn't do, because it really was too premature, was my water heater. When I moved in, it had a relatively new water heater, and I felt it wasn't a good idea to waste that resource because it was new. So I used it, and just recently it broke. And I was kind of thrilled because now I have a tankless water heater, and it truly only heats the water when I need it. It's on demand. And my energy bill has been cut, well, more than half. And now the other thing that also went down this year was my old heater. The heater was over, I think, 35 years old, maybe 40 years. And so it finally broke, and I upgraded the heater to a new device, and it's 90% efficient. And I'm telling you, I'm just absolutely thrilled. Even though it costs money to put these systems in, I am saving money monthly by doing that, and just by being aware, okay, if and when something, like if you have a water heater, what's going to happen next time? And you can look at it. But again, like sitting in my office here, I'm on this show, I'm looking outside at the beautiful sun. It's still, you know, it's not sunset yet. I mean, maybe the sun's down, but it's still light out. But I'm basically sitting in the dark, but looking out at beautiful nature. So I don't need a light on right now. I'm looking at my fruit trees. So how do we use energy? What can I do to cut back? Again, if we were in Africa, electricity? I mean, what's that? Some, you know, obviously in the city they have it. But if you're, you know, in the rural, out in a distant field somewhere, or even in the United States, there are Americans that don't have running water in the house. I heard like some statistic that a lot of people use outhouses and things, and so I guess they're more green than we thought. Anyway, Joey, do you know anything about that?
If you're talking about Africa, you can even have the city, but right out of the city, right outside of the city.
Yeah.
It can be, I mean, it doesn't, in Africa, it doesn't even have to say Africa. You can just talk about Latin America or places here even. But what we have in Africa is interesting is you may be living very rurally, and even in a hut still, but you have a cell phone. And so they've got to figure out ways to charge these cell phones. So there's a great company that's come up with these. I don't think this is off topic, but it's fun, and you can actually buy them if anybody's familiar with REI. They actually sell them there now too. But they sell special models for third world countries that are quite large, because the largest problem they actually have there is in these communities, and they're not to be rural, but is cooking. And when they cook over these open fires, it's super smoky, and they inhale a lot of carbon monoxide and these types of things from these fires. Well, and as well as trying to go out and cut down tons of things, different plants and trees to burn this wood. Well, this company's come up with these designs where you use very small little twigs and sticks in this, just like a giant metal pot kind of thing with fancy metal on it and stuff. But what it is you put the sticks in there, you get it to light on fire. And what happens is when that fire is generated, there's the heat starts building, and there's like a, I forgot the name of it, it's like a thermal generator or something of this type. The heat powers a type of little generator that creates a small amount of electricity. That electricity turns a little fan on, and that fan blows air into the combustion chamber and creates this very clean burning fire. Now they're not breathing any smoke. And at the same time, when that heat really starts generating in there, and they're using tiny little sticks to cook their food now, there's also enough extra power in that device to charge their cell phone. So cell phones are everywhere now. Even these people who carry their water, cook over an open fire, use an outhouse or what other means they have. Ideally, that a permaculturist has got in there and shown them how to compost their human manure and these types of things. But if those people haven't come yet, they're able to charge. They want to charge their cell phone. So that device in itself is making a great use of the wood for people saving their lungs, and these are women, because the women are cooking over the fires, and it's great for them, their children, and they're starting to make that move, and technology is still following them. So
that's amazing. I've never heard of that. I mean, that device, that's incredible.
Yeah, and you can get the little models at REI that you can take backpacking or camping or anything, and you can charge your cell phones with them. And you can, they have a little fan comes on, and it's a real neat device. How did we get there again? And we're talking about
personal use of energy and
right.
I don't know, simplifying things. But anyway, we're coming up towards the end of the show.
Already?
Yeah. Well, we have 6 minutes. We can always go longer. But yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, Jerry,
I talked more than you this time.
I try to keep quiet. It's hard, but you know, you were talking so much. I just didn't want to interrupt. But let's talk about, I mean, we've talked about a lot of really good topics in just building an awareness, a personal awareness of our living environment, what we do, what we consume, and if we're interested, which hopefully we are, what we can personally do to take care of the earth, to take care of people, and to the third permaculture ethic
is to return the surplus.
Yeah, so I think we've done a great job doing that. So one thing I did want to talk about again was last time we talked about Permaculture Voices, which is a upcoming conference in Southern California next March, in March 2014. So if you go to permaculturevoices.com, we have some huge names that are coming, very important people that can help all of us be leaders to make a difference, to start to make a change and to go back to our communities and to share what we've learned. So if you get a chance, if you can go to permaculturevoices.com, take a look, and hopefully you can join us. And there's an open invitation to anybody who's in the San Diego area on vacation or visiting. Go ahead and visit fruittreeforest.com. That's Joey's website. And he runs a permaculture demonstration site called Tipuana Farm. And we'd love to see you there. I'm moving there very shortly. And, you know, it's really, we have what we call permaculture fun.
That's
right,
for sure.
Joey?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody does. The kids do. The dogs do. The chickens do.
Yeah, there's never a dull moment, ever. There's always something interesting going on the many different parts of the land. Like if you're interested in bees, we have fruit trees, we have a trampoline, we've got like the dogs are so much fun. Not only are our dogs having fun, but the neighbor's dogs come too. Every
That's
day,
true.
The neighbor's dogs come. There's like three or four of them that come, you know, different times of the day because they're like, hey, what's going on? And they're welcome too, right? It's
That's,
fun, Joey.
It's true. They are welcome as long as everyone behaves around the chickens.
Right.
But our one dog's gotten real good at making sure that the chickens are protected. So I'm pretty happy about that.
What's that, Sadie?
Yeah, Sadie's doing good.
Oh, good. Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Rosemary almost got killed by a coyote the other night. But
well, I saw her. I saw the wound.
Yeah, but Sadie ran the... attack the coyote and saved Rosemary.
That's good. Yeah, Rosemary's a tiny little dog. I don't know what kind. Do you? It looks kind of like a mini Doberman, but I mean,
kind of. Yeah, she's a mix from the pound.
The same coloring. Yeah, the dark.
Yeah.
But she's like fearless and wants to be a big dog, but she's not. She's a little dog. And anyway, she's my favorite, right, Joey?
She loves you.
I love them all, but she always comes to visit. And... all right, so fruittreeforest.com. My website is asktallpaul.com. And if you have any ideas for future shows, especially here on this Going Green, the permaculture topic, every Thursday, Joey and I will have a show. And we'd love to hear your questions. My email is asktallpaul@gmail.com. And we'd love to even have you call in and ask your questions or comment and, you know, get this going. We had, again, a huge number of people listen to our last show, which was the first one last week. And hopefully this will continue to go. Share this on Facebook. You can actually embed it now on your Facebook. There's a little embed button on the page.
On this
and,
page?
Yeah, on the main episode page, it says embed, and it might not be available until after the show is recorded. So like in 5 minutes, it'll be available. You can post it on Facebook, and you can embed it right on your website. All right, everyone. Thanks so much, and let's do this together. Have permaculture fun and build an awareness, build a community where we have support and we can learn from one another and just, you know, take care of the earth, the people, and return all the surplus. And there's so much surplus. We just need to, you know, share. And a lot of problems will be solved, don't you think, Joey?
I think a lot of the problems will be solved because it just, as you share and you build, you think about earth care and people care, you start to care about yourself. And that's, I think, an important thing for a lot of us. So we start to care about ourselves. And then it just flows out to everybody, and it's a real positive and loving kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. We'll see you next week. And tomorrow I have an episode with Christy Howard, and that's Freedom Fridays. So log in at 7 p.m. Pacific. Talk to you later. Bye.
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 Bye.